This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now it's Food Friday. Summer is coming to an end. With it, the days of garden fresh fruits and vegetables. But if you want to keep eating delicious quality produce year-round, might be time to try out canning, pickling, and preserving. Our next guest got national attention a couple years back for dominating a county fair in Appalachia with her canned corn, canned tomatoes, pickled peppers, sauerkraut relish, spaghetti sauce, and jelly and jam, plus cookies and quilts. She has a new cookbook out, and she's here with some inspiration and advice for us, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy canning and pickling? What are your favorite things to get into a jar? Do you have favorite recipes or advice to share? Do you remember a time when preserving produce wasn't just a hobby, but a necessity? Or are you just getting into it? Maybe you're canning something this weekend and you have some questions for our guest. You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Linda Skeens is the author of Blue Ribbon Kitchen, Recipes and Tips from America's Favorite County Fair Champion. Came out a couple months back. She's won over, do I have this right, 1,400 ribbons at fairs and cooking competitions over the last decade. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Now, it's a busy season for you right now. I think you've got some fair season. You got a lot of great produce coming out there in Virginia like we do. What projects do you have going over the weekend? What are you putting in jars?
Well, I'm getting ready to put some stuff in the Russell County Fair Sunday. I have made dill pickles, bread and butter pickles, chow chow, corn relish, sauerkraut, five kinds of jam. I've made a new jam the other day, and you have to use bourbon, jalapeno peppers, and blackberries in it. I've never made it, and it's pretty hot.
That sounds fantastic. Is this something you invented on your own?
My youngest daughter found it on the phone. She said, Mom, you're always wanting to try new recipes. How about trying this one? So her husband loves hot peppers. So I tried it, and it's actually pretty good.
Now, you wrote something in the book that surprised me. Now, you're winning blue ribbons all over the place, but you say, you know, earlier in your adult life when you got married, you were not a good cook. I think you said you were a bad cook. How bad was it?
It's pretty bad. My mother was a wonderful cook, but she'd always have the cooking done when I'd get home from school or when I get out of bed every morning, you know. But I learned out of necessity. I right off had two kids right away. I was 16, and I said, if I'm going to have to feed them, and my husband had to eat. So I learned to cook, and some was passed down and some I learned on my own, but I'm a pretty good cook now.
Oh, I think you got the ribbons to back up that statement too. Now, When did you start? What were your first steps when it came to pickling and canning? What were your first experiments?
Well, the first things I started doing, my mother-in-law lived beside him at the time, and she taught me how to make kraut and how to make jelly and some stuff, and some I just learned on my own. My best advice to anybody starting out, if you don't have a grandmother or a mother or someone, you know, to help you, you can buy the ball canning book at like Rural King or Walmart, anywhere it sells canning supplies, and that book will tell you how to can or freeze anything that you can think of, and it's wonderful. A lot of my recipes comes out of there.
What if somebody's thinking, yeah, I want a can, I've never done it, what do you recommend their first experiment should be? Like, what are some of the easier things to can?
I think jelly or jams are the easiest to start out with, really, I do. And then after that, pretty much green beans and peaches and things, tomatoes and things are fairly easy. They're just a lot of work getting them prepared. But I would say start out with just some jam, seriously.
Now, if we want to go on, you know, we want to can our tomatoes and our peppers and our corn and stuff like that, what are the basic pieces of gear we have to have on hand?
Well, you have to have a canner, and some people use pressure canners. I like the old-fashioned canner that you cook on the stove, and you have to have canning jars. Make sure you use a ball canning jars, because you can't use those mayonnaise jars. If you use them, when they get that heat in them, they'll break and you'll ruin your stuff. Make sure you have good seals and lids to go on them. And all your stuff I always make a list of what all I need when I'm going to make something, and I have it ready when I get started doing it.
We're talking to Linda Skeens on this edition of Food Friday. She has won many, many blue ribbons at county fairs. We're talking about canning and preserving, giving some ideas from her new book, Blue Ribbon Kitchen, recipes and tips from America's favorite county fair champion. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Maybe you got something in the works for this weekend. Tell us about it at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Linda, you write in the book, you're worried that canning is kind of a dying art. You're really hoping that younger generations get into it. Why is that?
Well, I just think a lot of people, young people now, I know with the necessity of both parents, a lot of times working, they eat out a lot and they don't, that it's just easier to go to the store and buy stuff. But my mom and dad had seven kids and my mom canned to feed us. That fed us during the winter because you couldn't run to the grocery store every time you turned around. And she would can 100 to 200 cans of stuff and it kept us all fed during the winter. So I just kind of got into that mode. I started making jams and stuff when my daughter and my oldest son was just little. And I found out when you can your own stuff, you know what ingredients is in it. There's nothing in it that you don't know what it is. You know what you're putting in there. Like you have your green beans, your salt, and your water. That's all's in them. And that I feel good about that because you know what you're feeding your family that way.
Now, you mentioned earlier your chow chow. And one of our producers here asked, what is chow chow? So can you tell us, what is chow chow? What goes into it?
Okay, that's something my mama, that's her recipe. Most people like chow chow. Do you know what soup beans is?
Soup
pinto
beans. Cooked. Oh, pinto beans. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, cooked. Chow chow is excellent with that and cornbread, or some people actually like it on hot dogs. But what goes into it? Red, yellow, green peppers, sweet onions, cabbage. Then you have your vinegar and your spices and your sugar. And it's just like a relish, really. But it's better than any relish you get in a store. And then my mama added some banana peppers to it to give it a little zing. And I've always put banana peppers in mine.
I'm looking at the picture. This looks beautiful, the chow chow in your book. Now, when you're putting jars in for the county fair, like how important is, you know, the visual, how it looks, as opposed to just, you know, how it tastes?
Okay, they judge how your stuff looks, but also all your canning stuff has to be like a quarter or a half inch to the top of the jar. Say if you fill a jar of peaches and it's not all the way full to the top, they take off points for that. Your jars have to be sealed, no rust on the lids. They have to be in regular canning jars and has to be processed right. If it does, and they judge your jams if it sets good, you know, if it's like a solid jam, if it's real watery and like runny, you know, they judge on all that stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about jam a little bit. What do we do to make sure our jam doesn't get too runny? Because even if I'm not putting in the fair, I don't want, you know, juice on my sandwich. I want jam.
Use sure gel. That's why they call it sure gel. It's a fruit pectin. I've been using it for 40 years. If you put that in there with your sugar and your fruit, it always gels. It always sets, and I've never had any that didn't.
Now, Linda, do you garden yourself? Are you actually canning stuff out of your own garden this time of year?
No, actually, we have this place about an hour and a half from where we live. And it's a huge farm. They sell green beans, corn, tomatoes, cabbage, squash, anything that you can want to can. And also my brother-in-law has made 5 trips out of his garden to my house. He's brought zucchini, squash, tomatoes, peppers, hot peppers, green tomatoes. I have friends, they know that I can, and they will bring, Kathy Brock came down there one day with 2 huge heads of cabbage, my daughter that her neighbor would give her. She brought me tomatoes. People donate stuff to me, and then I buy the rest of it. But we have farmers markets, too.
Yeah, I used to – I just do fridge pickles now and fridge relishes, but I used to can. And what I do is I'd go to the farmers market, and I'd talk to farmers and say, hey, next week, bring those bruised tomatoes, you know, the stuff that doesn't look pretty. I'd buy it cheap and then can all of that. That's a good way to use the stuff that, you know, you wouldn't slice up and put on a salad. Have you found canning to be a good way to use the ugly produce, they call it?
Well, Man's Farm, the one I told you about, they have special boxes of tomatoes, like there's a box, and they're overripe. They're great for salsa, or for canning, but they're not good that you'd eat on your table. And I get those to do my canning with and
Nice.
make my salsa and canned tomatoes with. And they have special ones for that.
We're talking to Linda Skeens, author of the book Blue Ribbon Kitchen, Recipes and Tips from America's Favorite County Fair Champion. She's giving us advice on how to can and pickle and preserve our favorite foods safely and deliciously. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. I guess we don't can and preserve in Wisconsin anymore, but everybody would be calling in. This is the time of year. Call in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite pickled foods? Any unusual ones? How did you learn to can or preserve, maybe make a jam? What questions do you have for our guest? She's done just about all of it. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation with Linda Skeens, author of Blue Ribbon Kitchen, Recipes and Tips from America's Favorite County Fair Champion. We're talking with her about canning, pickling, and preserving our favorite foods to enjoy year-round. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your stories, maybe your project for the next couple of weeks if you can. If you need some advice, some inspiration, Linda's got it. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Debbie is with us in Knife River, Minnesota. Debbie, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to ask about?
I want to know what to do or how to deal with these choke cherries. I've got a whole sink full of choke cherries here, and I need to know how to efficiently make them into juice because they're a real pain to deal with.
And tell us about choke cherries. That's not a household word, Debbie.
Okay, so choke cherries are these little tiny quarter-inch berries that are cherries that grow on wild trees are really good for you, but they are about 90% pit, and they're and I have made them into jelly before. I've made them into juice, but the biggest hang up is trying to get enough juice off of these things. You have to pick. I picked 20 pounds last year, and probably only got a few quarts. It's just a lot of work. I'm just wondering if there is a more efficient way to deal with them.
Debbie, thanks for calling. I don't know if, do you have these choke cherries in your neck of the woods, Linda?
No, I've never heard of them, but we do have little red cherries on trees. But I agree with her. I don't know of a way that they're easy to get out, those pits out. And the thing of it is, there's not much left when you get the pit out, so... I'm on that one. She's got me stumped. I would have no idea. I know I have sat and pitted cherries, like she said, for hours and maybe just get a little bit out of them. So I don't know.
Debbie, thanks for the call. I guess just hard labor on that one. Carol joins us in Oconomowoc. Carol, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Carol?
I wanted to ask about pickling hard-boiled eggs. I have home chickens. And I'd like to make pickled hard-boiled eggs. I've never done it before. And I wouldn't mind if they were a little spicy. Just wondering if that's something there's some tips or tricks for.
Carol, thanks for calling. Linda, this is something we do in Wisconsin. You can get these at some of the old bars. You got pickled eggs up on the counter. Is this a Virginia tradition too?
Well, I don't do pickled eggs because my husband, he wouldn't like them. But now my son-in-law has done them. And I'm not sure how. I know he uses vinegar in them, and he uses a little bit of sugar, but that's all I can tell you. He pickles bologna, too, like you do the eggs, but I've never done that because my husband's not he's not crazy about pickled stuff. But she probably could go on her phone. Kathy, my daughter Kathy, a lot of times when we're looking for something that we don't know, we go on the phone and ask it, and it'll tell you how to do it.
Thanks a lot for that call. Good luck finding that egg recipe. Now, something else we like here in Wisconsin, Linda, I know you've won awards for, is sauerkraut. And I remember my Polish grandparents making sauerkraut in their kitchen. What's your secret to your award-winning sauerkraut?
My mother-in-law just told me how to do it. She told me how to shred it, put it in the jar, and the solution to put over it with the salt and vinegar and water solution. I put it in those jars and pickle it, and it always turns out perfect. And now my mother used to take probably, they had these big things called crocks, and they would put the kraut down in there and put like cheesecloth over it and let it pickle and then put it in the jars. But I don't have one of those, so I just do them in the jars.
That was the way my grandparents did it. You got to have a certain tolerance for the smell when you got them in the crock in the house.
Yeah.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about canning, pickling, and preserving with Linda Skeens. Her new book is Blue Ribbon Kitchen, Recipes and Tips from America's Favorite County Fair Champion. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Gretchen is with us in northern Wisconsin. Gretchen, hi.
Hi. I learned how to can by watching some YouTube videos of some university extension offices had classes online, and I watched some people that on YouTube that did it. And so I started, like she said, with jams and jellies, and then just went from there to meats and different produce, because I found out that I could buy these things from the farmer's market or from the grocery store when they had very good sales. And I can chicken, and I can sweet potatoes, and my favorite classic tomato soup, and on and on and on. It's just fun.
Gretchen, thanks so much for sharing that with us. And Linda, Gretchen, I think, brings us back to one of the main points of canning. It's taking that thing that's there in abundance at one point in the year and then stretching it out through the rest of the year. How much fun is it for you? Is it to, you know, take that thing you canned now and then middle of winter, you're still eating something that tastes, you know, fresh and delicious?
It is good. Very good.
Yeah. What do you have things, Linda, that you look forward to? Like, I'm canning them now and I know I'm going to love it when I eat it in 3-4 months.
A jelly, mostly. But I like green beans too, like at Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners. Those fresh green beans you can't be beat.
All right.
They are good.
Thanks a lot for that call, Gretchen, and happy canning to you. Gary joins us now in Sheboygan. Gary, hi.
Hey, I've got a question. You know, years ago, we up in northern Wisconsin, there was a woman up there that every time we'd have a wedding up there, she would can venison for us for the weddings. And I'll tell you, that it was better than roast beef. And she passed away now, and never got a recipe from her for canning that. It was dry. It was kind of real dry in the bottle. There would be some gravy in there, but you had to put a little juice in with it or whatever. But god darn, people that didn't like to eat venison never knew that they were eating it.
Gary, thanks a lot for the call. Linda, we're giving you all of our favorite Wisconsin area specialties. Have you worked with canned meat at all? I know you said you had a relative who did canned bologna, but any other canned meat tips out there?
I've canned some chicken breast one time, went to the cannery. They have a cannery over from where I live, and a friend of mine bought some chicken breast that was on sale. We got a really good deal, and we packed it in the metal cans with the juice and canned it, and it's really good, like when you only open it up in the winter, you know, to make like chicken salad or stuff. But now, I met a man at the Virginia-Kentucky Fair this year that he bought my cookbook, and he is a canner. He can can. He said he cans venison, he cans squirrel meat. I could not believe him. He said his grandmother, him and all four of his brothers, had a can so that they wouldn't starve. She said she wanted them to grow up and know how to fix food and be able to eat it. So I was amazed at talking to him.
Thanks for calling in, Gary. Nancy is with us now in central Wisconsin. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there. I just wanted to comment. I learned to can from my mother, and I kind of continued that tradition. I do all my own fruits and vegetables, jams, and I can meats as well. I've always canned venison, like you guys were talking about, which is super simple to do, and salmon as well. Like venison and salmon, it's just a matter of packing it in like wide mouth pint jars, and you pressure cook it for 90 minutes. You don't add any water. You know, add your spices if you want. You add you know, onion if you want. But that's really all there is to it. And as long as you know how to operate a canning pressure cooker, you're good to go.
Nancy, thanks a lot for that call. Linda, Nancy mentioned learning from her mom. Now, have you passed down your canning secrets to your kids and grandkids at this point?
The ones that want to is interested, yes. That's why I wanted to really do a cookbook. It's like something I could leave them, and they'll always have a part of me in that book because I wrote the poems in it. It's got my life story plus my favorite recipes. So that's something I had always wanted to do. And you were talking about canning a while ago. I had an experience back last year. They said that at the place I was at, they called it jarring. And I said, well, yes, you do put it in a jar, but if you don't cook it properly and process it, it's no good. You might as well throw it out. And Linda, I said, we call it canning from where I come from.
Oh, me too. We definitely do too. Linda, just in our last few moments, something I love about the book, the canning parts and the other parts, you love cooking. It's something that's gotten you through tough times. Can you just tell us a little bit about how much joy you get from all forms of cooking?
Well, someone asked me a while back, they said, why is your chocolate chip cookies the winner? I said, I put a lot of love in it. That's all I can think. I enjoy cooking for my family. Like today, we've been cooking for the fair. We made homemade yeast rolls that were like big as a saucer, probably. Well, a coffee cup, anyway. We've made homemade cinnamon rolls. We've made pound cake. We've made four kinds of fudge. I made a fudge that's freeze-dried strawberries and freeze-dried blueberries in a white fudge to enter in the fair. We've made all kinds of stuff, and I just love doing stuff like that. I enjoy it.
Linda, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you for having me. And I hope I was sorry I couldn't be a help, but my husband's not a deer hunter, so I've never canned anything like that.
That's okay. That's Linda Skeeds, author of Blue Ribbon Kitchen, Recipes and Tips from America's Favorite County Fair Champion. Talk to her about canning, pickling, preserving, our favorite produce to enjoy year-round. You can keep sharing your canning favorites over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kett, as Wisconsin deals with new concerns about water pollution, look back at efforts to get PCB pollution out of the Fox River. That's coming up Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. With a presidential election just over a year away, the future of Wisconsin's election administrator is on shaky ground. A state Senate committee held a public hearing on Megan Wolf's potential reappointment earlier this week, though the full Senate would need to vote on confirming her. Or maybe not. State Attorney General Josh Call has argued that going forward with any further action on her position at this point is actually illegal. You could join in at 800-642-1234. A lot of twists and turns to untangle here. Have you been following this story? What questions do you have? Do you work as an election official in Wisconsin? How is all of this affecting you? Do you think we need a change in the top elections job here in the state? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Molly Beck starts us off, senior capital reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering Wisconsin politics and state government. Molly, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, before we dive into the tangles here, a quick reminder, Megan Wolf, talk about the job she does and how important it is, say, for an election year like 2024.
Megan Wolf, she oversees the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which is basically Wisconsin's statewide elections agency. She handles all of the bipartisan commission's directives for election clerks, and which means, you know, they set some rules on how elections can be run in conjunction with the law. They kind of carry out what the election law is with different rules that are kind of at a very base level that lawmakers don't get into the weeds that way. So the commission takes it a step further and says, this is how we should do things.
And now
she's charged with carrying out the commissioner's wishes.
And now we've got her term technically coming to an end. The Elections Commission holds a vote related to her reappointment, and then it gets weird. Talk us through what happened.
Yeah, so her term expired at the end of June, but I'm not sure if your listeners remember, but there was a Supreme Court ruling that was it was in a lawsuit filed over the former DNR board chairman who refused to leave his post after his term expired. The Supreme Court said it was okay for him to do that. So the Democratic commissioners on the Bipartisan Elections Commission decided to abstain from voting on her reappointment in an effort to A, keep her in her job, because there is a side effort in the Senate among Republican lawmakers to remove her. And that is all based on concerns in the Republican base over the 2020 election that they are attributing to her. So the Democratic commissioners are using this Supreme Court ruling to as their basis to say there is no vacancy. The Supreme Court has said that the only reason for somebody in that kind of a position to leave is if they are removed or if they die, and there's no vacancy to reappoint her to. Republicans in the state Senate disagree with that. They moved forward with her her reappointment, even though there was no reappointment that the commission voted on. So that's the very complicated situation we're in right now.
And so the Senate is going ahead with this thing. We've got the state attorney general saying, no, you can't do that. A legislative analysis, legislative legal analysis says you probably can't do that. But we have a hearing on Tuesday. What happened at that hearing? Who did we hear from?
Yeah, so the Senate Elections Committee held a hearing on her reappointment, even though the reappointment is up for debate. And there were a lot of people that, if you were following the news in 2021, when former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman was hired by the Assembly to investigate the 2020 election, you know, a lot of people who were affiliated with that review that ended up not finding any evidence of widespread election fraud or that the election was incorrectly called. A lot of the allegations that were put forward by Gableman, you know, he did not put any evidence forward to substantiate them. Nevertheless, that line of thinking among a group of the Republican base, not the entire base, but a very vocal portion of the base, believes that the 2020 election, Donald Trump won the 2020 election in Wisconsin. And there were a lot of people at this hearing that were talking about that and blaming Megan Wolf for decisions that they believe, you know, led to an incorrect election outcome in Wisconsin, even though there have been lawsuits and audits and, you know, nonpartisan reviews and recounts paid for by Donald Trump to confirm Joe Biden's win in Wisconsin in 2020.
Talking to Molly Beck from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about Wisconsin's top election official and a possible attempt to remove her, debates over whether that attempt is valid. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Molly, one voice not heard at this hearing about Megan Wolf's role was Megan Wolf. What do we know about her decision not to appear at this hearing?
Yeah, I mean, there was a elections commission here meeting just before this hearing was set to take place, and the Republican chairman of the commission put forward a motion to give her direction on whether to go or not, and that motion ended up being retracted, and they didn't give her any advice. But during that meeting, she said that she felt like she was in a very untenable position because she doesn't want to attend the hearing if the commission doesn't want her to, you know, which is, you know, what, you know, if they had given her direction, she would have had an idea of what to do. But after the Attorney General Josh Call put out a memo later on that said, you know, because of this recent Supreme Court ruling, there is no vacancy, and what the Senate is doing, they're taking up a reappointment that doesn't exist, essentially. So right after that, that letter was put out publicly, she said she was deciding not to go. The commissioners don't, you know, there are Republican commissioners and Democratic commissioners. The Democratic commissioner said they didn't want her to go because they didn't believe the hearing would be fair to her. The Republican chairman said it probably wouldn't be fair to her, but she is the best person to defend herself and defend the commission and explain exactly what the commission does because she is an expert in the field. So, but ultimately she decided not to go.
So we've got Republicans in the Senate. They took the step of having this committee hearing. Do we have a sense of what's next from Republican leadership in the Senate on pursuing this?
No. The Senate Majority Leader, Devin LeMahieu, he's the leader of the Senate. He has not answered many questions from the Journal Sentinel, at least about what's next or about the legal analysis that the legislature's own attorneys put out last week. I wrote a story about saying that, you know, for the Senate to take up a reappointment, her reappointment would require four votes of the Elections Commission, and she did not get that. So that conflicts with the Senate leader's explanation of why they're moving forward with this. He has not answered any questions about that or what's next. We also asked the Senate Elections Committee Chairman Dan Knodel whether he would schedule a committee vote on her reappointment, and he said he wasn't sure.
And if, just briefly, Molly, if the Senate goes ahead with this as though they have the authority, votes to remove Megan Wolf from the position, I'm guessing we'll see lots of lawsuits on her behalf.
Oh, yeah.
have people already put their chips on the table on that one?
That's pretty much the only thing anyone agrees on in the situation. This is heading to court.
Molly, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Molly Beck, senior capital reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We talked to her today about this week's hearing on the status of Megan Wolf's position on the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Coming up, an expert on Wisconsin politics joins in, and you can join in too at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how all this works? What could happen the longer that Megan Wolf's job, the top election job, hangs in the balance? How do you want to see this resolved? Do you want to see a change in leadership at the top of Wisconsin's election administration? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about Megan Wolf and her future as administrator for the Wisconsin Elections Commission, how the situation is playing out politically in the state legislature and legally. You can join in at 800-642-1234. David Cannon joins us now, professor emeritus in the UW-Madison Department of Political Science. He's researched election administration and reform, and he's the author of the book Race, Redistricting, and Representation. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you, Rob.
A complicated story here, David. What do you think of this flu-for-all about the state's top election job?
It really has been quite remarkable. And Molly did a very nice job of summarizing the key background in terms of how this is all unfolded. But I wanted to emphasize one additional point just for some more background here. There are really sort of two sets of questions here. One's the procedural side, and one's the more substantive side. And Molly summarized very nicely the procedural question, which is there really a vacancy here the Senate can even be voting on? The Attorney General says no. The Legislative Council says no. The State Senate's going ahead. So that's the first point that I think was covered nicely already. But the second, on the substance side, mm-hmm. I think it's really important to emphasize the point that, again, that Molly brought up, that Megan Wolf is not making independent decisions here. She's carrying out the wishes of the commission, the bipartisan commission with six commissioners. And on the specifics of what the Senate Republicans are upset about has to do with the conduct of the 2020 election on things like the use of drop boxes, ballot curing, that where the election clerks were adding the witnesses' addresses. If the witness address was missing, that would cause an absentee ballot to be thrown out. Well, clerks were actually, you know, adding in those addresses, you know, according to the guidance from the Election Commission and from Megan Wolf. And then also the nursing homes, where there were ballots sent to nursing homes rather than the voting deputies that normally would go there. Well, the thing is, on each one of those points, with the nursing homes, for example, in March 2020, there was a 6-0 vote by the commissioners. So a unanimous vote with all the three Republicans and the three Democratic commissioners all agreeing that, yeah, we want the people in nursing homes to be able to vote. COVID's going on. No one's being allowed into nursing homes. The voting deputies can't go in there. And so that was a 6-0 vote. And then there were some subsequent votes that were 5-1. And then on the ballot curing, that was first put in place back in 2016, again, by a unanimous 6-0 vote, and had been used in 11 statewide elections, you know, through 2020, and no one ever complained about that before. And so these are things that after the fact, with sort of Trump partisans, you know, saying the election was stolen, looking at things that, like, you know, some evidence did come out from some of the nursing home voting that there were some people who had voted that should not have voted in nursing homes, but just a handful of votes that didn't affect the outcome of the election. But they're focusing in on things like that and blaming Megan Wolf for this, when in fact she's just carrying out, in those cases, the unanimous 6-0 decisions by the commissioners.
What do you think it would take to get back to, in Congress, they call it regular order, doing these things in the routine way we'd expect them to?
Well, that's a really good question. If I knew the answer to that, things have gotten so bad right now. And people have used the term, like, you know, scorched earth politics. And it's kind of what we're seeing right now. It's just hard to know how we can unwind this to get back to the way things were, where, you know, it, again, going back to 2016, things like, you know, filling in witness addresses from the public record to allow someone to vote, that was a bipartisan, yeah, let's make sure, you know, people can vote. And now it's just become so polarized that the very act of trying to administer elections is incredibly controversial. There's no easy answer to that in terms of how we can unwind this and get back to where we were.
Talking to David Cannon from the UW-Madison Department of Political Science, looking at the state's election commission, the administrator there, argument in the Senate over whether to keep her on, arguments about whether they have a choice the way things have played out. Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Steve in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I think the guest is being a little disingenuous. Megan is in charge of the swamp. The swamp presents information to the folks that vote on it. And it was pretty obvious in the 2016 election, the Democrats blamed Jill Stein and the Green Party for diverting votes away from the Democratic Party. And they made it their effort to get the Green Party off the ballot in 2020. They made that publicly clear. And they did that using Megan Wolf and her providing information to those people that voted to keep the Green Party off the ballot. That's one of the main reasons why Trump lost in Wisconsin, as well as a variety of states. Additionally, Democracy in the Park, which was proven to be illegal by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Megan Wolf is the person in charge of the swamp that presented the information to these people to vote.
Steve, thanks for the call. Yeah, the Green Party was left off the ballot after the Elections Commission vote over one of the candidates listing two different addresses. The state Supreme Court ended up backing that up 4-3. But David, to Steve's point, Megan Wolf, he says, steered the Elections Commission wrong.
Well, I mean, Steve's right that, you know, she does have a fair amount of agenda setting ability in terms of how issues get presented to the commission. But ultimately, it is their decision that's being made. And on the point of Democracy in the Park, actually, it's a good example, I think, of how this has all become so politicized in terms of looking back at the election of 2020, seeing something that's controversial now that we didn't see as controversial then. In the letter from the attorney for Robin Voss and the state Senate majority leader at the time, Scott Fitzgerald, complaining about Democracy in the Park, in that very letter, they endorse the idea of drop boxes. They say that, you know, Democracy in the Park is bad, but in the letter they say further, voters may also deposit their completed absentee ballots in authorized drop boxes. We wholeheartedly support the voters' use of these convenient, secure, and expressly authorized absentee ballot return methods. And this is written on behalf of Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald. And so this is in September of 2020, like right before the election, saying that drop boxes are the preferred method of voting. And yet after the election, all of a sudden drop boxes become one of the targets of how Megan Wolf led the commission astray. But shortly before the election, this again was not a partisan thing.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Ron joins us now in Manitowoc. Ron, hi.
Thanks, Rob. I'm wondering if the Election Commission has been a rather recent creation by the Republicans, and is there a move by the Republicans to eliminate it?
Ron, thanks for the call.
You're right. The Wisconsin Election Commission is what took the place of the previous Government Accountability Board that oversaw both ethics concerns and election issues and was actually held up as a national model of how nonpartisan election administration could be done. That was dismantled, and in its place was the Wisconsin Election Commission that has, I think, still done a very credible job of administering elections with the bipartisan commission where there are three Republicans, three Democrats on the commission. If they did try to dismantle it entirely, which there's been some rumors of that, there hasn't been any serious move right now to do it before 2024. I think that would be pretty impossible to do. But it's hard to know what would replace it, because there are a lot of decisions that, as a previous caller, Steve, put it, in the swamp, where you have to make those decisions on, in real time as things come up. You can't keep on going back to the state legislature to ask, them to rewrite laws all the time. You always have to have administrators interpreting laws. And so that, I think, would be a bad move to get rid of the commission entirely.
Ron, thanks for the call. Nate joins us now in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. From what I've read, she's done a competent and good job. And I think this wouldn't even be an issue if you didn't have a partisan gerrymandered state Senate that seems to have a group of conspiracy theorists driving it, when basically what happened in the 2020 election is that people who were legitimate Wisconsin citizens were able to cast their ballots and get those ballots counted as they should have been.
Nate, thanks for the call. David?
Yeah, I mean, there, as I think Molly pointed out in the introductory part, that there are people in the Senate who were claiming at the hearing on Tuesday that Donald Trump did actually win the election in 2020. But every investigation, including the Michael Gableman investigation, the 14-month, $1.1 million investigation, showed that there wasn't systematic fraud. They pointed to several concerns like the nursing home voting and the grants from Mark Zuckerberg and some other issues that they were upset about, but nothing that was at the level of what would have changed the outcome of the election. So I think that probably is at the root of why some people want to get rid of Megan Wolf, is they want to have someone to blame for what they see as an illegitimate election.
Nate, thanks for the call. And David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, it's good to be with you.
That's David Cannon, Professor Emeritus in the UW-Madison Department of Political Science. We talked to them about the politics around the future of Wisconsin Election Administrator Megan Wolf, as Wisconsin gets ready for another big election in 2024. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, a new book tells the often overlooked story of the theft of Native American lands in Wisconsin and in the Midwest. Explore that history with the author of Seeing Red, Indigenous Land, American Expansion, and the Political Economy of Plunder in North America. And from mining frozen ponds to a freezer in almost every home, the way we've used ice has changed a lot over the years. We'll learn more with the author of the new book, Ice, from mixed drinks to skating rinks, a cool history of a hot commodity. That includes a stop in Milwaukee for some hardball ice business. A lot of great stories and anecdotes in the book, and an unusual history of a pretty common product nowadays. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.